Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. I'd like to welcome you from all over the world and all the other stations that are carrying it. We have a lot on health and nutrition today. We're going to talk about the spice of life, how cinnamon cools your stomach, from University School of Environment in Engineering in Australia. We also have how Himalayan kodo millet is found to have nutraceutical and functional food potential, meaning it is a superfood. Who knew? I'll tell you about this kodo millet in a little bit. We also are going to look at how many kids in the United States are using psychiatric drugs and why we should not do that. And eating your greens could enhance sports performance, according to the University in Belgium. And also, we're going to be looking at one of the new studies on vitamin E and how it can prevent pneumonia, especially in men. I'm setting aside a lot of time today for my guest. She's in France. We'll be speaking to her in Paris. She is Dr. Diana Johnstone. She's an American geopolitical investigative journalist. She focuses upon Western foreign policy. She has a long track record as a civil rights activist going back to the Vietnam War. She was the European editor for the U.S. Weekly In These Times for 11 years and the press officer for the European Greens in the European Parliament. And we're going to talk about Hillary Clinton's imperialist ideology and her role in the humanitarian catastrophe in Libya and Syria, and what is likely to happen if she becomes president. Also today, we're going to look at how arms sales distort U.S. foreign policy. This is from Jonathan Marshall from Consortium News. We never hear that discussed. We only hear how we have to support our partners in the Middle East. Partners in what? Making money? Destroying the lives of people in Yemen? The poorest nation in the Middle East, 24 million people are starving to death. Saudi Arabia is bombing them using white phosphorus that we make, we sell to them, they bomb. So do we have the capacity, desire, or political will to pull back from our actions to ask, so you made a lot of money. You got yourself a nice standard of living. What are the ethical and moral considerations of how you made that money? I'll be asking those questions. Also, I'm going to challenge the concept that the New York Times, the Washington Post, the CNN, virtually the entire media, and especially Fox, is doing anything except propagandizing when it comes to Syria and Russia. A special report from Robert Perry on this very topic. And how the big banks buy politicians, and they're bought. And what happens when scientists treat cancer with cannabis? And how a former CIA officer's secret life taught her one lesson: listen to your enemy. And how George Carlin has something to say about the ruling class. So we have a lot to share. I won't get to everything, but I'll get to as many things as possible. I'm in the midst of completing four major films. One will be finished, ready for airing within a week, and then I'll schedule it into theaters. The others will come over in the next 12 months. One of those is called Manufacturing Madness. And what I do in this film, and it's taken almost 6 years of filming and interviews, is I have only board-certified physicians, psychiatrists, and I look at how they determine that someone has a mental problem, how they diagnose it, how they treat it. In the process, we find that there is literally not a single mental condition that they can define scientifically based upon testing the body. There's no blood chemistry. There's no x-ray. There's no MRI. There's no hormone balance. It's all speculative. For example, saying that a kid has bipolar. Well, why do you say the kid is bipolar? Well, because the kid laughs and the kid cries. Clearly, that's duality of two ends. You laugh and you cry. That's bipolar. Now, you may think that's absurd. Of course, kids are going to laugh. Kids are going to cry. Humans are calm and humans yell. That doesn't mean they have a brain chemical imbalance. But if we said people are just being normal, there's no drug to give, no diagnosis to make, no profit to be made. Here is the latest information that shows you why we have serious problems we're not even discussing in the mainstream media. Over 1 million American children from birth to age 5 are now prescribed very powerful psychiatric drugs. According to Health Freedom, the data, which was reported in IMS Health, the largest, most credible source of prescription data in the United States. So listen to these figures. 274,804 babies given psychiatric medication. 370,778 toddlers and 500,948 preschools have been prescribed psychiatric drugs so powerful that they carry 386 international drug regulatory warnings. In total, the number of one-day-old to five-year-old prescribed dangerous and life-threatening drugs, psychiatric drugs, 1,080,176, all before they've ever entered kindergarten. So when we look at ADHD drugs, ADHD, 44 drug regulatory agency warnings, and they're giving it for kids under a year old, months old. How in the world can any doctor, any nurse, anyone say that a baby, not even a year old, has ADHD? It is not humanly possible. It's a fraud, and those doctors should not be practicing medicine. But then again, you have 181,000 diagnosed with ADHD between 4 and 5 years of age. And then they're giving babies as young as 6 months antidepressants. And there's 134 drug regulatory warnings against this. How many kids got 6-month-old got antidepressants last year in the United States? 26,406. How many 2 to 3 year olds? 46,102. How many 4 to 5 year olds? 45,822. How would you know that a young child, a baby, has depression? There's no way of doing it. Antipsychotics, same thing. Tens of thousands given antipsychotic, anti-anxiety drugs. In fact, last year, from 1 day old, to 1 year old, 227,132 babies were given anti-anxiety drugs. This is a system that is so corrupt, that is so vile, that is so unscientific, but no one is criticizing it. There's no reforms, there's no committee hearings, because the companies behind these drugs make sure that they pay for all of the continuing education classes that doctors attend in exotic locations. They give funding to these doctors. They give huge amounts of money to departments of psychiatry at leading universities. They bought the whole system, and they control the media. Just watch how many pharmaceuticals are all advertised in a given 24-hour period on all of American media. It's huge, and yet no criticism comes back on the other side of that. I won't tell you more about my film, but you will find it interesting when you see what happens when board-certified psychiatrists are filmed undercover and then they're confronted out on the street about you just gave a person after 2 minutes and 43 seconds a diagnosis of a psychiatric disorder. This person happens to be a physician and completely healthy, and you gave a prescription for toxic medication whose side effects is suicidal ideation and acute anxiety. Why? Well, you know, when people come to see us, they expect to get a diagnosis and a prescription. Well, why not give them a diagnosis they're just going through a rough time in life, or that they have some behavioral issues instead of brain chemical imbalance issues? Can you show me any evidence, a single article in the entire world literature supporting brain chemical imbalance? No. So all of you know. Last year, I helped lead a demonstration outside of the American Psychiatric Association's annual meeting. Many of you were there, and I thank you for showing up. They wouldn't allow us on the same side of the street. We were across the street. But I had a chance to meet with psychiatrists from around the world, and I asked them, is there any scientific basis to psychiatry? And the answer was no. So just remember that the next time you decide to trust a person to give you a diagnosis and give you a drug that could end up causing you to go into a school and kill a lot of people. Oh, did we forget? Not a single person has mentioned that 95% of all mass killings around the world, except for terrorist events, around the world have been with people who are on psychiatric medications, and the side effects of these drugs they're on are frequently acute psychotic behavior, including the desire to hurt other people, and yet it's never mentioned. Separately, from the University of Horticulture and Forestry in India, Himalayan kodu, that's K-O-D-O, millet, is found to have functional food. Now, functional food means it actually functions in the body, so when you consume it, it does something very good in helping your body. Like, let's say probiotics are functional nutrients, a functional food. They would help reestablish healthy, good bacteria in your gut. Writing in the peer-reviewed journal Food Chemistry, researchers from India's Parmar University of Horticulture said they sought to phytochemically investigate kodu millet for its nutritional and antioxidant potential. Quote, kodu millet is an extremely hardy and drought-tolerant crop that can survive on marginal soils where other crops may not survive, and can supply between 450 and 900 kilograms of grains per hectare. And that's good. By virtue of their importance, millets have a great potential for being utilized in different food systems by virtue of their nutritional quality and economic importance. And here it says it helps with vascular complications. Well, that's big. That's important. Now, this non-starchy polysaccharide, this millet, is in the same family of the millet that you see grown throughout in Africa. And millet in Africa is called the poor man's protein. It's very easy to grow, very hardy, and a cup of millet contains an enormous amount of protein and vitamins, minerals, fiber, has a wonderful, lightly almond nut taste to it, and you don't even have to cook it. In fact, the best way of preparing millet is to take a bowl, put your millet in, and then pour some hot water in, put a little towel over it, and just stir it and let it sit. That's all that's necessary. 10 minutes later, it's soft and ready to eat and use in any way you want. So millet. Another nutrient that we don't intentionally use except for taste, and that's cinnamon. But cinnamon has hundreds of studies of what it does that's good. It's very good for diabetics, helping to control blood sugar. But according to RMIT University School of Engineering in Australia, as published in Scientific Reports, adding cinnamon to your diet can cool your body by up to 2 degrees, and the spice may also contribute to general improvement in overall health. And so think of the people who would like to cool their body. Think of the people who use cinnamon to reduce gas. That's a historical way that you help get rid of gas. And pepsin from the stomach walls, which in turn allows the stomach to be cooler and easier digestion. So if you're really hot and you want to cool down, why don't you have some mint green tea with a quarter teaspoon of cinnamon in it? Or if you have an upset stomach or problems with digestion, have green tea with an ounce of ginger, some cinnamon, about a quarter teaspoon, a quarter teaspoon of anise, and a quarter teaspoon of fennel, and Manuka honey, half a teaspoon. Stir it around, drink it down. Terrific for digestion, upset stomach. And finally, from the University of Leuven in Belgium, they found that eating your greens, now that's all types of greens, collard greens, kale, spinach, lettuces, these are rich in nitrates, and this helps to improve circulation in your blood, and therefore you have better exercise, more endurance, better outcomes. So having yourself a glass of vegetable juice, and particularly with beet also with those greens, you're going to have a better workout. This was published in Frontiers in Physiology. Oh, and by the way, vitamin E, according to University of Helsinki, prevents pneumonia in non-smoking males. So this was a good study. Reduced it by 35% in 7,469 participants. Now think of how many people in America develop pneumonia. So now you have something you can use to help them. And this is, in the higher the amount, let's say this was a relatively small amount, but if you got up to a higher amount, you can expect even more prevention. Quote, thus, even the 72% decreased pneumonia risk with vitamin E in participants who quit smoking may be a real effect. So let's say that you take 400 units of vitamin E twice a day from natural sources if you have pneumonia. This is showing that it could save your life. And a single glass of orange juice, one glass, and a glass of 16 ounces, boosts cognitive function and conscious mental activity, according to the University of Reading in the United Kingdom. Quote, in terms of antioxidant prowess, oranges are a highly underrated fruit. They contain rich sources of carotenoids, flavonoids, and vitamin C. And it shows that a single glass of flavonoid-rich orange juice can boost cognitive function compared to a placebo. The data was published in the European Journal of Nutrition. And it's terrific. Now, what I would suggest is, if you want more lutein and xanthine and other nutrients that help with vision as well as cognition, then why not make a glass of orange juice, good, fresh orange juice, organic oranges, but then put some blended blueberries and raspberries and have that. Now you got a really good shake for the brain and for the heart and for your vision. That's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us. Welcome all of you from all over the world. I'm Gary Nall, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. Now, recently we heard, and I think rightly and fairly so, that back in the almost 30 years ago, Donald Trump had a really bad year, and he took a carry-forward loss of $900 and some million. That's something almost every business would do. That's fine. But in the process, she left out the fact that last year and the year before, her and her husband paid some income tax, about $4.5 million, but it went to foundations that gave it back to him. That's not cool. So when she's saying, you know, where's your money, you know, Trump, for building schools and Pell Grants, where's yours? Then she made the following statement, and the New York Times and everyone else have printed it. Quote, this is what she said in a campaign stop in Toledo. What kind of genius loses $1 billion in 1 year? Fair enough. Again, good criticism. However, according to Pam Martins and Russ Martins, if Hillary Clinton really wants to know what kind of genius could lose $1 billion in 1 year, how about $6.2 billion in 1 year in the case of traders at J.P. Morgan? And ask Jamie Dimon, the head of the bank. The $6.2 billion loan whale loss at J.P. Morgan is far more interesting because it involved wild derivative gambles in London in 2012 using taxpayer-backed insured savings deposit at the largest bank in the United States, a bank that has contributed to the Clinton Foundation. And the U.S. Senate's Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations conducted an in-depth investigation and reported on the matter, and the chairman of the subcommittee at the time, Senator Carl Levin, stated that J.P. Morgan, quote, piled on risk, hid losses, disregarded risk limits, manipulated risk models, dodged oversight, and misinformed the public. So, fair enough to criticize Trump, but why don't you criticize Wall Street that received in excess of $7 trillion in publicly backed loans, and also in the process of bringing the entire financial industry almost to a point of crash, was forgiven. No one was prosecuted. And also, how about the banks that she has taken money from through the Clinton Foundation, or her and her husband have lectured for $250,000 to $500,000, a short little lecture of no significance, who also engaged in the largest money laundering scheme in history, one bank. Also, and that money laundering was almost $1 trillion over several decades. They were allowed to keep all their ill-gotten gains and only paid at less than 1% fee. How about those that also used terrorist money, drug lord money, knowing they were doing that, and hiding it in overseas places? Or how about fixing the LIBOR, the interest rate? Or how about fixing the price of commodities like gold and silver? And all these schemes, scams, not a single person under Eric Holder's Justice Department or Obama's Justice Department, not one has been brought to justice. And how about the Fortune 500 corporations, the top 25, that paid no taxes and got rebates? One got $5 billion in rebates, paid no taxes, got rebates, based upon the very same principle that Trump did. He didn't get a rebate, he got a tax carry forward. So the entire tax system is wrong, in my opinion. We should abolish all corporate taxes as we know them, abolish the IRS, abolish the Federal Reserve, allow only the Treasury to print money at zero interest, and tell the banks to stuff it, give them no more money that they didn't earn to begin with on interest, and then put a one form of tax on every corporation where you cannot deduct a thing and you cannot make money in another country and hide it and keep it offshore. No, everything made, if you're an American company, you have to pay, let's say, 20%. That's substantially less than the corporate tax now. That would bring an additional $1 trillion. Now put a 1% tax on every algorithm, every trade on Wall Street. You're dealing between $300 to $700 billion a year in additional tax money. Now give a one-time forgiveness, amnesty, bring in all the money outside the United States, anywhere between $31 trillion and higher. You're looking at about $6 to $7 trillion. Then we don't have these problems. We don't have the rich able to escape what everyone else is held accountable to. From our environmental segment, Fukushima radiation has contaminated the entire Pacific Ocean, and it's going to get worse. This is from True Activist. As many of you know, I produced a documentary called Knocking on the Devil's Door, and we thought it was bad. It was. The amount of radiation that we were exposing, but it's a lot worse. The nuclear disaster has contaminated the world's largest ocean in only 5 years, and it's still leaking 300 tons of radioactive waste every day. So when you think, what was the worst nuclear disaster in world history? Most people would say Chernobyl in the Ukraine, but they'd be wrong. The 2011 earthquake caused disaster was the point on this. The tsunami that caused the meltdown at the TEPCO nuclear plant in Fukushima, Japan, there it is, and the entire ocean is now irradiated. There's a principle in science that's a flawed principle, but it's called the answer to pollution is dilution. So the more you dilute a pollutant, the less polluting it is. Not today. There's a whole new science showing that parts per billion, even parts per trillion, could still be having a negative impact. And if that weren't bad enough, that we've been putting tons, 300 tons of radioactive material per day into the ocean every single 24 hours, that'll continue to do that indefinitely as a source of the leak, because you cannot seal off that leak. It's inaccessible to both humans and robots due to extremely high temperatures. It should also come as no surprise that Fukushima has contaminated the entire Pacific Ocean in just 5 years. This could easily be the worst environmental disaster in human history, and it is almost never talked about by politicians, establishment scientists, or the news. So it's interesting to note that TEPCO is a subsidiary of General Electric, also known as GE. Oh, by the way, they got $5 billion in subsidies, paid no taxes on, I think it was $7 billion in profit, pre-tax profit. So one of the largest companies in the world, which has considerable control over numerous news corporations and politicians alike, is behind this. So could this possibly explain the lack of news coverage of Fukushima in the last 5 years? There is also evidence that GE knew about the poor condition of the Fukushima reactors for decades and did nothing. This led 1,400 Japanese citizens to sue GE for their role in the Fukushima nuclear disaster. Even if we can't see the radiation itself, some parts of North America's western coast have been feeling the effects for years. Not long after Fukushima, fish in Canada began bleeding from their gills, mouths, and eyeballs. This so-called disease has been ignored by the government and has decimated native fish populations, including the North Pacific herring. Elsewhere in Western Canada, independent scientists have measured a 300% increase in the level of radiation. And according to them, the amount of radiation in the Pacific Ocean is increasing every year. So why is this being ignored by the mainstream media? It might have something to do with the fact that the United States and Canadian governments have banned their citizens from talking about Fukushima so people don't panic. Further south in Oregon, starfish began losing legs and then disintegrating entirely when Fukushima radiation arrived there in 2013. Now they're dying in record amounts, putting the entire ocean ecosystem in the area of risk. However, the government officials say Fukushima is not to blame, even though radiation in Oregon tuna tripled after Fukushima. In 2014, radiation on California beaches increased by 500%. In response, government officials said that the radiation was coming from a mysterious unknown source, and they knew nothing more about it. Well, it's not unknown, it's not a mystery, it's Fukushima. So Fukushima is having a bigger impact than just the west coast of North America. Scientists are now saying that the Pacific Ocean is already radioactive and is currently at least 1,000% more radioactive than when the U.S. government dropped numerous nuclear bombs in the Pacific during and after World War II. So if we don't start talking about Fukushima soon, then we're going to end up with some major loss of biodiversity, aquatic life, and people's health. And one other thing, The U.S. is driving the rainforest destruction by importing Amazon oil. A new study has reported. The report found that California, despite its green reputation, is refining the majority of crude oil, with one facility accounting for 24% of the U.S. total. No one knew that. U.S. imports of crude oil from the Amazon are driving the destruction of some of the rainforest ecosystem's most prime areas and releasing copious amounts of greenhouse gases, according to a new report. The study conducted by the environmental group Amazon Watch found that American refineries processing 230,293 barrels of Amazon crude oil every 24 hours. And California, despite its reputation, is averaging 170,978 barrels, or 7.2 million gallons of crude Amazon every 24 hours, with the Chevron facility in El Segundo accounting for 24% of the U.S. total. So the expansion of planned oil drilling poses one of the most serious threats to the western region of the Amazon. And with most of the oil originating from Ecuador and Peru and Colombia, and while green groups have enjoyed some success in fighting the Amazon ambitions of large oil firms like Chevron, other players are from countries such as China have moved in, and with proposed oil and gas fields now covering 283,172 square miles of the Amazon. Let me put that in perspective. They are now destroying more rainforest to develop than the entire size state of Texas. So, the Amazon represents the lungs of the planet. It sequesters that carbon and gives off oxygen. So now we're creating a desert in much of the Amazon. So we still have to ask a larger question. Do we want to know this information, or are we capable of handling it by changing some of our consumerist-based habits? On the one hand, ask anyone, do you want the latest iPhone, the latest pad, the latest computer, the latest technology? And they say yes. Then ask them, are you willing to take a look behind that product to see the dress you're wearing? Was it made in Bangladesh, where a woman is abused by slave labor, having him paid 14 cents an hour so you can buy that? Do you really need that? If you're really for women's rights and women's health, then watch where you're buying your clothes. Do you really want to eat that genetically engineered apple? Or do you want to support local grown organic food and local supported industries? Cobalt mined in the Congo, where people have no protections. So that goes into your cell phones and your computers. So I think that we have to develop an entire education program to enlighten people about where does stuff come from? How's it made? Is it good or not good? Does it can it be done in perpetuity? Is it sustainable? Or would we need three planets to continue our consumer binging? Questions to ask. I'm Gary Nall, back in a moment with my guest. Please stay with us.
When the night has come and the land is dark and the moon is the only light we'll see.
No, let's now go to Paris. We're standing by as Diana Jonestown, and I gave you her background and bio a little earlier, and her work has been supported defended by Noam Chomsky and John Pilger and Tariq Ali and many others. And Diane has received her doctorate from the University of Minnesota, and her articles have appeared in Counterpunch and Tom's Dispatch and In These Times and other sources. Her latest book is called Queen of Chaos. Nice to have you with us today.
Well, hello from Paris.
Now that Hillary has Bernie Sanders sidelined and she doesn't need to flip-flop off and on about issues that fueled Sanders' momentum among voters, she can just be herself. Meaning, in my personal opinion, she can be the new imperial presidential candidate. And that means her wholehearted support in NATO and its expansion through former Soviet states and beyond, further alienating the U.S. and Russia in order to enter a new Cold War that would benefit her thousands of friends, professional friends in Washington, the neocons, both liberal and conservative, and especially the private military-industrial complex, and it finances them to a huge tune. Also, her unswaying support for Israel and any action it takes against Gaza and the West Bank, turning her back on the U.S.-funded atrocities being committed now by Saudi Arabia and Yemen, further pulverizing Libya into the dark ages, and to advance the same in Syria by removing Assad and replacing Assad with a U.S.-friendly neocolonial puppet government. We have heard her voice on these issues during the primaries, and I want to get to the events in Syria, and particularly Hillary's role in destabilizing the Arab nations, including Syria, as Secretary of State. But before we do that, please describe how you would characterize Hillary's foreign policy, what is her mindset, her worldview, and the U.S.'s fundamental role in it, and how do you account for the fact that the United States interventions while she was Secretary of State, including Libya and Honduras, have been social, economic, and humanitarian disasters, and yet the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, CNN, have all praised her for these instead of doing their homework and condemning her. The forum is yours.
Well, Hillary Clinton is simply a part of a huge machine. I don't think she is of great interest herself as a person. She has simply created herself as the instrument of this exceptional nation which is ordained somehow or other to rule the world. I mean, of course, she doesn't say it that way. She says leadership because of our values. But it comes to the same thing. It's a declaration of the policy which was first, first written down in 1992 with the Wolfowitz Doctrine, which has become actually U.S. policy, which is to maintain U.S. world hegemony by weakening or destroying any potential rival. Now, that is a very, very sinister outlook, which means that any country which potentially could be a rival to U.S. domination is an enemy which must be fought, perhaps regime changed. And that is actually, the policy that we're following. I say we because, unfortunately, I mean, there are divisions apparently in Washington. I know that there are some people who disagree with this, but the fact is that that neoconservative policy has simply taken over the government, in particular the State Department, where Hillary reigned for a while. You saw that with a recent declaration of some 51, I think, State Department employees who regretted that Obama hasn't done enough to destroy Syria. Of course, they don't put it in those terms that he hasn't. That is really preparing for Hillary Clinton's presidency. She has her people in there, the mixture of neoconservatives and liberal interventionists who are particularly powerful in the propaganda part of this world hegemony by presenting, portraying U.S. aggression as some sort of humanitarian rescue mission. By recently, just now, I'm particularly irate at seeing. Well, I wrote a column just was in the Counterpunch a day or so ago about the Avaaz campaign, which in fact comes right out for for a no-fly zone in Syria, but that is not alone. There's a whole huge orchestrated campaign to reduce the war in Syria to a fairy tale of a wicked dictator who likes to bomb little children. And this is a disgusting, outrageous appeal to sentiment in order to justify massive killing of people in that region. And of course, this policy was designed first by neoconservatives who were also advisors to the Israeli government with strong links to Israel. And in a way, they have designed American policy on Israeli policy. Israel has the policy, of course, of being the main power in its own region. That's the reason for the hostility toward Iran and toward all Arab nationalist countries who voice some support for Palestinians. I say voice some support because really there isn't much actual support for the Palestinians from anybody, but they at least will maintain that Palestinians have a right to their country, even though they don't do much about it. But all of the present policy is to destroy all of Arab nationalism by eliminating the independent states, not only Arab but also Libya. In order to make Israel the dominant country in the region, but they have translated that into making the United States the dominant power in the world along the on the same lines of, for instance, murdering people at a distance. The Israelis sort of initiated that policy. I mean, they murdered scientists in Iraq and Syria and Iran, long-distance assassination, and this has been perfected by the drone war. Of course, when you send a drone to kill somebody, you kill all the people around him, but that doesn't seem to matter. It's a totally criminal act, but we do this all the time. And then, of course, there's a great complaint because the Syrian regime, in trying to fight to get back its country, has some of its own collateral damage, as we would call it when it's ours, but they present it as deliberate. And you see, that there's just a whole system now of lies that we're living in. I mean, official lies and lies by supposed non-governmental organizations, which are in fact the propaganda arm of the government, in preparing a public opinion to accept aggression as some sort of humanitarian rescue mission. And all that is absolutely supported, even initiated by Hillary Clinton. She's supposed to be, I mean, this is preparing for her administration, which will probably make war its main business, simply because domestic policy in the United States is in a deadlock anyway. Congress is always against whatever the administration wants, and the domestic policies, it's completely in the hands of Wall Street, whatever people say. And so the way presidents find that they can be somebody and show their power is in messing up the rest of the world. And Hillary has already shown her talent in that, namely, especially in the total destruction of Libya.
You've written that the United States no longer has a real national purpose except for remaining on top of the world. Now, this is certainly the case with about 90% of all of our bills and acts, laws, supporting vested interest, but not the larger amount of the American public. Moreover, we have over 900 military bases scattered throughout the world, so the U.S. certainly qualifies to be called an empire. How do you see Hillary being more the friend, puppet, or mouthpiece for the rulers of empire instead of an advocate for our nation's citizens and their immediate domestic needs?
Well, I mean, you know, when she began her openly political. Well, of course, she began her political career in the White House with her husband. But from the time she was in the Senate, where did she go? What did she show her interest in? Did she want to get onto some committee that had to do with social welfare? No. She gets on the Armed Services Committee, and she makes big friends with Senator McCain, who's almost a caricature of a hawk. And so, in fact, all of her political career has been to show what a tough commander-in-chief she will be. And I think she shows really no interest in domestic policy. She got Bernie Sanders brought up some points, and she sort of will vaguely echo a little of that, but with no conviction. It's quite clear that her ambition is to break the glass ceiling about sort of being the first woman president who will lead a major wars. I mean, that is clearly, you've seen, I mean, her speeches, some of her speeches are made absolutely frightening. And so I don't think that she will do much of anything about domestic policy. What she'll do, she'll appoint to high positions African Americans, Latinos, women, you know, to show that we are all together, because there's a token of every possible group, homosexual, of course. Every possible group is represented in the ruling clique, showing no consideration for those groups, the masses of those people, whose incomes are low and shrinking, who have trouble with housing, et cetera, et cetera. So, in fact, this type of identity politics, that is, promoting tokens and showing to show that the groups are all equal, is her substitute for domestic social policy. And all that serves as propaganda for the hegemony wars, because it's used to say, look how democratic America is. We have all this variety. We have all this diversity. Therefore, we are a model for the whole world. And so this false domestic policy of promoting tokens instead of doing things for masses of people is also a propaganda ploy in the aggressive foreign policy.
Okay, I'm going to share a few thoughts of mine, and take any one of these you wish, because Hillary Clinton is against everything I'm about to say, all right? But I believe we can only return our country to some sense of equality if we engage these. The reinstatement of the Glass-Steagall Act to again separate the savings and loans banks from the speculative investment banking. Banning trading in commodities that are necessary for life. I believe we should ban all profit that can be made from water and food. Also to support a thorough investigation into the background and corporate and institutional influence over Obama's secretive transatlantic conference treaty and the TTP, because we've never been told who was involved, which lobbyists were involved, and what relationship they had to either Clinton or him. But she's still for this. Also to stop the foreign Federal Reserve from giving any more no-interest loans to banks and corporations and bailing them out when they're part of the problem, declaring a moratorium on home foreclosures, forgiving all student loans. There are also to create a national food program to see that the 16 to 18 million hungry children in the United States are fed each day, to de-ghettoize America's inner cities and create a livable, sustainable environment where you can't profit from it and speculate on it. And where you have proper food growing and good housing and different cultural environments and the guilds that teach people different crafts and therapy sessions, and also to create a reforestation, employing the youth to plant trees and hedgerows to help also with global warming, and to support senior citizens in free community hospital service and food co-ops, and to close down all and decommission all our nuclear plants, and to ban all private funding for any election to take corporate interest out of the political element. Now, that's just some of these, like stopping gas hydrofracking and offshore drilling. So these are some of the things I would suggest we need to do. She's against every one of those. What does that tell you?
Well, of course she is. In fact, of course, Glass-Steagall was repealed by her husband, under her husband. And of course, she's against all of that. And of course, Bernie Sanders was hinting towards some of that. I mean, he didn't go that far. He didn't go as far as you did, which is, I think, how far we should go. But he was hinting in that direction. And frankly, he was rejected by the Democratic Party. I mean, the party backed Hillary Clinton. So, of course, there are a few words somewhere, I guess, in there. But the very fact is that the Democratic Party did everything to reject Bernie Sanders and put in the candidate who is against all of these progressive, decent, just necessary measures. The TTIP, I think, is in trouble, by the way, because the total secrecy of it has aroused a great deal of suspicion everywhere, and notably in Europe. I think the European countries won't take it, but I think they're cooking up something else, which will be just as bad to take its place. Because, in fact, these corporate powers are running everything with the financial section in secret. You see, the all of this thing of the election, we don't have any choice. The choice is made by the money which chooses the candidates and by this two-party system which doesn't allow any ideas or programs outside the ruling structures to get anywhere. And So in fact, there is no choice. The power isn't even in the government, and you know, to get back power, you have to get at the organizations where the power really is, and the power really is in the financial industry, in institutions, and in the major corporations. And as long as they operate freely, they dictate the political life, which is mostly a charade to make people think that we have a democracy.
Diana, one last issue I'd like to address before the end of the program. I'm going to give a quote here. This is from the Begin Sadat Center for Strategic Studies in Israel about a month ago. Quote, "The West should seek the further weakening of the Islamic State, but not its destruction. Allowing bad guys to kill other bad guys sounds very cynical, but it is useful and even moral to do so if it keeps the bad guys busy and less able to harm the good guys. Moreover, instability and crisis sometimes contain portents of positive change. The American administration does not appear capable of recognizing the fact that ISIS can be a useful tool in undermining Tehran's ambitions and plans for domination in the Middle East," end quote. And we know that the Golden Heights, controlled by Israel, the al-Qaeda-friendly Syrian rebels, conduct their training and recruitment there. So the question is, how serious is the United States about fighting ISIS? Or are we simply following a policy keeping terrorism alive in order to achieve other goals? And we already know Hillary's deep commitment to Netanyahu and the Israeli lobby. So has she simply adopted Israel's position on ISIS and the Islamic terrorism?
Well, I think it's pretty clear that she has. And also, of course, I know that quote, and he ends up saying, because he's putting pressure on the American administration, he says, oh, the American administration doesn't realize this. But I'm afraid that he's wrong, and that the American administration is exactly on that line. Obama has been hesitant. Now, I can't read anybody's mind, but he has, in action, been hesitant. And he refused in the autumn 2014 to bomb Syria, to punish chemical attacks, which in fact were false flag operations carried out by the rebels precisely in order to lure the United States into the fight. And Obama took the Russians came up with a face-saving device, meaning that, you know, we can get together and get rid of all these chemical weapons. And this worked, and this was a peaceful step. And it was a step that could have led toward peace. But obviously it's been protested, denounced by the Israel lobby and the war party ever since. And so Obama has ended up looking on the defensive and absolutely out of control of his own administration. And the proof of that is the 17th of September, when the United States and its so-called allies deliberately bombed and destroyed a unit of the Syrian army that was defending territory against the terrorists. Now, I'm sorry, whatever you say, the actions are very clear. The United States is in there on the side of the Islamic terrorists. But not to make them win, just to keep the killing going.
That's where the profit is, and also to keep stoking the fire of hate against Putin and Russia. We benefit enormously as a military-industrial complex with the threat of war and the threat of annihilation, so therefore the bank accounts get filled and the average American is none the wiser. I appreciate your good work. Thank you for Queen of Chaos, The Misadventures of Hillary Clinton, and Diana Johnstone. Thank you for all good work you're doing.
Well, thank you very much for our conversation. Good luck.
She's over in Paris, and that's the end of our program. I want to thank you all for listening and look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day.
The thought of you keeps running through the back of my mind. Every time I'm